I'm Megan Segura.
And I'm Eric J. Mack.
And this is The Daily Dish, Bravo's official podcast.
So, Megan, the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills reunion continues to shock and delight us. And I feel like we need to bring someone else on to help us recap part three.
Like a Real Housewives expert of sorts.
Who could it be? Who could we get?
Maybe Dave Quinn.
Hey, Dave.
Hi. In my best Jill Zarin voice, I'm here. Surprise.
Except this is a good surprise. We're not going to start turning red and being like, I think you should go.
Oh, my God. Bye, Rashi. Bye, Rashi. What they should have said to her. Jill got, I mean, Alex and her rashiness. I will never forget that.
Never.
Never. Well, for those who don't know, Dave is a journalist and, as we've mentioned on the show, the author of the new book, Not All Diamonds and Rosé, the inside story of the Real Housewives and the people who lived it, which, by the way, is number one top-selling nonfiction book on Amazon this week. Dave, congratulations.
Thank you so much. I mean, never underestimate the power of a Housewives fan. I think that no one saw us coming, but here we are right at the top. And it's because this, as you guys know, fan base is so passionate, so excited about it. It's been such an honor to write something like this for the fans. And I really am so thrilled. They've been so happy.
For the fans, by a fan.
Exactly. By a lifelong fan, by someone who's been watching Bravo since back in the Queer Eye days. Like, I could have written a book about Duncan Nutter. Do you guys remember Duncan Nutter?
Oh my God.
Oh my God. You guys are so young.
Well, thank you.
Showbiz moms and dads, show dogs moms and dads. Those were the early, early days of Bravo. So it's just exciting to see, you know, so many people being so excited by it.
Well, that'll be the next book.
Yes, I'm down for it.
Obviously wanted to get your thoughts on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills reunion part three. We're right in the thick of it. And I think we need to jump in.
Yes,
I am down.
All right. So first of all, I just want to say that I would do literally anything in this world to make Kathy Hilton never cry again. It's too sad.
It's just very hard for me.
It was so sad. I love that vulnerability from her. We haven't really seen her in that way this season. And I thought it was a nice color. You know, I always view these housewives as like onions and they're slowly peeling layers back. So that was a good onion moment for Kathy.
Well, it's odd too, because if you guys watched the Paris Hilton documentary on YouTube, you know, like they deal with some really heavy subjects and Kathy did not cry in that, you know? So it was interesting. I don't think she's someone who cries easily, and to see her get so emotional about her mom, it just, oh, heartbreaking.
Yeah, she doesn't cry because she pays other people to cry for her, probably.
The lady cries for her.
Yeah. She's so rich. She's like, I'm feeling emotional. Cry. That's good.
Are you buying into the Kathy hype, Dave?
Hook, line, and sinker. Like, they have all of my money when it comes to the Kathy hype. I remember when she was first announced. At the time, you know, we was just finishing up the interviews for the book. So I was obviously not going to include that, but I was kind of shocked. I was like, wow, why now? Why Kathy? I feel like it didn't feel to me like it would be that exciting of an addition, but boy, was I wrong. I mean, I think that all season long, she's given us such levity. And I mean, who is hunky dory is a line that I will be reciting for the rest of my life.
It's also a meme that I will never unsee. Have you actually seen the one where it's like a blue muscle hunky body with like the dory head? It's pretty terrifying if you really look at it.
I mean, people are so creative. I wish I had that skill set, but I will never forget that either. I'm with you, Eric.
All right. What do we think about the American Woman drama? We got into it a little bit in this episode.
Well, I was going to say, it sounds like not necessarily a miscommunication, but it seems like rumors probably started swirling. Kathy heard things that the show was maybe about or what could be on the show. She probably had a lot of fears about what could be represented on the show, knowing that it was based on her family. But it sounds like Kyle really didn't do anything that would have done her family injustice or disrespected her mom. And it seems like maybe they just didn't really address what they were upset about. It seems like a missed opportunity. And all of the time that, you know, they mentioned that was wasted. It's like, maybe if actually Kathy or Kim had just kind of seen the pilot and watched the show, they would have felt a different way.
I fully agree. And I feel like this happens oftentimes in life where you hear something and you just immediately jump to conclusions. You don't take the time to like actually investigate it, actually see it. I'm sure on the surface, it sounded like something that was kind of a violation. But when you watch the end results, I don't think that Kyle had any, you know, negative intentions here. Maybe she just didn't like Alicia Silverstone. Maybe she was just like, no, I don't like her. I'm not watching it.
Well, this makes me think of a question for you, Dave, which is like, did anyone get upset with you about the book who maybe hadn't even read it yet?
No, not anybody who hadn't read it yet. I think that most people understood what it was going to be before. And those who chose not to participate, I wasn't feeling any sort of negativity or anger towards it. But I will say that since it's come out, certain people have been a little upset, and not at me. It's just at things that other people have said about them, claims that they have made. I definitely think some people who didn't participate may be feeling a little regretful that they didn't participate, because certainly it would have been an opportunity to tell their sides of the story. But whether you spoke to me or not, you're in the book. So we mentioned it all.
Yeah, I know Sonia seemed upset about something that Heather Thompson said on social media. That's where I saw it anyway. But if there's anyone else you feel like telling us about, you know, feel free.
Well, the Sonia thing was so interesting because now there's been video of her and Josh Flagg talking about the exact same incident Heather was referring to. And she was joking about it in a very lighthearted, fun way. So I don't necessarily know whether she was upset about what actually was said or she was just kind of dismissing it. But I definitely heard, and I'll only say this because she's spoken openly about it in the press, I definitely heard from Melissa Gorga. She was a little peeved at things that other people, from her co-stars, maybe even her sister-in-law, had to say about her. And again, I think it just shows like who you are at your heart. She is not somebody who really likes to kind of play in the mud. And she said, if I knew it was that kind of book, maybe I would have, but I tried to get her there. I tried to say like, you know, I asked all the same questions I asked to everybody else. And some people, I think, were a little bit more open about their true feelings and other people were in a space of moving forward. So we didn't get that from Alyssa as much, but you know, looking back at it, I'm sure she's not feeling great about it.
That's interesting.
Maybe we'll see a little bit of that play into next season on Jersey. I don't know.
Well, yeah, it was interesting. If you saw the Rugut trailer, the Ultimate Girls Trip trailer, I keep saying Chobani is my favorite flavor of, or my favorite brand of Rugut. You saw the Rugut trailer. It seems to come up. The tension between her and Teresa is still really there over her joining the show. And that's a lot of the thing that she was frustrated about in the book. So perhaps those conversations in the interviews that I did brought something up. I don't know. I'll never know. Mm. But it's still alive and well between the two of them.
As much as I was glad we got the American Woman drama, I feel like the real family drama I want to one day dive into, and I don't know that we ever will, is the Rick and Mauricio drama over Mauricio leaving Rick's real estate company and starting his own.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, they said that they're all hanging out again when Andy asked, you know, are all four of you together? And they're like, oh, Rick and Mauricio. So it sounds like things have been buried, but I think for our purposes, I'd like them to resurface
a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. I want to hear all about the drama of what really went down. I wonder whether, just as you know, guys, they're kind of like, oh, it's no big deal, you know, business, da da da. I mean, to be fighting over millions, it's kind of like a penny change to them.
No kidding. Well, we got our crystal package in this episode, where we sort of revisit Crystal's introduction to the group this season. Dave, how would you rate Crystal's first season as a Real Housewife?
10 out of 10. I think she's an incredible Real Housewife. First of all, she's gorgeous. I want to, I mean, she's totally beautiful. I even liked the ugly leather pants. I think that she looked great in them. And I love that her husband, you know, Oscar winner Rob Minkoff is just kind of like there and participating and playing in them, you know, like seeing him hanging at parties with like Maurizio and PK. It's like, this is incredible. Obviously her brother is very attractive as well. And I want him around all the time. Preferably shirtless would be amazing. And yeah, I think that she really opened up about her life. I think she fit in well. It's hard, I think, to join a group like this who have been around, these friendships who have matured over years, but she seemed to find her way in, and I'm thrilled to see, you know, what the future might hold for Crystal Kung-Minkoff.
Yeah, I definitely want to see much more of her.
And her brother.
And her brother. Yes. And the kids. The kids are cute.
So cute.
Yeah.
I mean, I really do want to get into like the Erica part of the reunion, because I feel like that's what we all came for. You know, that's what we're watching for each episode. And I do think it's been very smart how they've included a lot of it in each episode. Like, we're not just waiting until part four to get Erica stuff.
Yeah, I fully agree. I mean, I think everyone anticipated that it would be three reunions of fluff and then just a bunch of Erica stuff in the fourth. But every episode, there's been new layers to the Erica story that I've been really excited by. And I think this episode especially was filled with incredible moments.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really curious what you two think, because when I had watched the filming of the reunion remotely, I had said to Eric after, I was like, you know, I just think that people might be a little disappointed because it's not like we're going to get a ton new information. Like, Eric is mostly just doubling down on what she has said all season. Do you guys feel that watching it, or no? Am I off?
Well, I think it's interesting because especially this part of the reunion, they dig into, I think, the biggest mistake that Eric has made this season, and that's self-centering throughout the whole situation. And I don't think she's really been able to see how the things that she's said and done make her look a certain way. And that's what they start digging into. So I'm starting to see Erica in a different light throughout this reunion, because she's a lot more composed. She's had some time to process and deal with what she's been going through. And I think she's had a lot of time to prepare to answer these questions. Whereas throughout the season, she was getting these things left and right. These things were popping up, you know, allegedly in real time. She didn't get any heads up about these articles, the LA Times piece and everything. So I think she's had a lot more time to step back and prepare herself. But I don't know, there's still a couple holes along the way.
Mm. Yeah, Megan, it's interesting that that was your perception from watching it go down live, which, by the way, a dream come true. Like, I'm sure every listener right now is like, oh my God, what I would give to be in your shoes. It is one of the Bravo bucket list moments I've never had. And I'm putting it out there that I'm available anytime anybody wants to invite me to be a fly on the wall. But I'll just say that I have been, I'm a little bit more of a measured person in general. I'm a little bit, as a journalist, somebody who tries to listen to people's truths, and I'm a big empath. So I don't necessarily end up taking sides in a lot of these battles that in the way that Housewives fans tend to do. And of course, it doesn't help that I know a lot of these women on the back end. But a lot of the criticism towards Erica this season, to me, has felt a little misogynistic. It's felt like a lot of people have come at her being like, well, she's so cold, she must be a liar. Like, I feel like women can be reserved. Women can have personalities where they're not as, you know, flamboyant and open and trusting with everyone. And that doesn't mean that they're liars or manipulators or schemers. So I've tried to kind of break that away. And I think all along I've just been taking her for face value. Everyone seems to say that she was faking crying with the mascara. I really took that as a very sincere, honest moment. And going into this reunion, while I knew there were some discrepancies or some things that I wasn't truly aware of, I haven't made her guilty in the court of public opinion. You know, she is not, that's not my verdict. She is still somebody who I think is going through an enormous amount of difficulties. And I cannot imagine how I would navigate that if I were her, how anyone would navigate that. And in this reunion specifically, where there was that moment between her and Crystal, when she said, like, do you want me to be mad? Like, am I mad enough for you now? I thought that really resonated. Like, you're married to someone for so long. The feelings aren't just going to be anger. It's not a, you know, black and white situation. It's not that clear. There's so much gray matter here. And I think she did a good job at this reunion of kind of explaining a little bit of the complicated emotions she's been experiencing, which therefore, in my eyes, color a lot of her behavior.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I've been really, I think, more aligned with your thinking too, Dave, just in terms of, you know, I think that we can't say Erica is guilty until we have facts and all of that. And I am with you that the crying mascara moment, I really did take it as genuine. But I guess my takeaway from all of this was people who felt like Erica wasn't doing enough are still going to feel that way. And people who were sort of team Erica will come away that way. You know, there wasn't... Because even the moments when the women are trying to explain and Andy's trying to explain why the Instagram is coming off not great, it's like she can't just take a moment and let it sink in.
If you're presenting an attitude of consumption and indifference, that is it. The Erica Jayne character is built on consumption.
She's getting paid to post.
Okay, fine.
Should I not do that?
All I'm saying is,
should I not pay the bill?
It lands differently when there are air crash victims.
You've got to shift a little bit. I don't have to do anything except defend myself.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I mean, I do think that fans, and especially Housewives fans in general, tend to be very firm in their decisions. I think that if Erica would have unzipped her skin and showed you her bones, you'd still be like, she's not being transparent enough.
Right.
Like there's nothing she could say that's going to make anyone believe her. And it was interesting that all the housewives universally on that couch agreed that there's no way she knew about what Tom was going through. Like they all said, we don't believe that you knew any of the money situation, which I thought was really like, okay, well, they all believe that she didn't know, but certainly I don't think they've done a good job of letting their fan bases who are constantly attacking Erica believe that they think that. But ultimately, I'm with you, Megan. Like, you're right. Nobody is going to change their perception. You have to, asking Housewives fans to go into this with an open mind is pretty impossible.
Absolutely.
I will say, in Erica's defense, too, for me, it was so cringy to have to watch Erica watch the scene with Doree and PK and Kyle and Mauricio when they were talking about the situation. And in real time, I think Megan and I talked about it. I kind of enjoyed that scene in a way where I was like, it felt very authentic. It felt like this couple that's together and they've been drinking a little bit and they're talking about one of their friends. And the story does sound, as Dorit says, so preposterous. And it kind of, you get caught up in the moment, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
But then watching Erica, you know, watching her have to see that and knowing that that did cause a problem between her and Kyle, and they didn't really talk much leading up to the reunion and they were so close before that, I did feel bad for her, because it's one of those things that she probably expects that those conversations are happening behind closed doors. But when you see it then on camera and it's two people who have really kind of, you know, been on your team this whole time, it probably makes you feel a type of way.
This is a case where I agree with what you're saying, Eric, but this is a case where I felt like Erica maybe could have just brushed it off a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Like, I felt like she is smart enough to recognize that, of course, people behind the scenes are going to be gossiping, and that, like, Kyle has been very supportive and been there for her. But again, like, we've seen this happen before, right? Think about when Teresa was going away and all the legal things were happening with her. We saw plenty of scenes of Caroline, Jacqueline, you know, behind the scenes asking these questions, Kathy. And I felt like everybody in those cases were being pretty supportive and kind of Teresa, and she still got upset. So when you're in, you know, such a tough spot, I guess you're really vulnerable and you feel really exposed. And I guess it feels like a betrayal in a way that I don't understand, because I've never been through that.
Right. There's like a little bit of self-awareness missing, I think, because as Kyle said this season so well, you know, it's unbelievable. I'm not saying I don't believe her, but it's unbelievable. And I wish Erica would see that too, you know, that it's not, they're not laughing at you, but saying what happened, these two car accidents and the surgery, like saying it out loud, you do feel like you're trying to explain the plot of a movie to someone, you know, and you're just like, I got lost in the truth somewhere.
Oh, this is Die Hard 4, you know, Pasadena.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's so true. I mean, it's so absurd that it is laughable in a sense, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, to say that she's lacking self-awareness, have you met a housewife before? Have you been watching housewives? Like, isn't that what you want in a housewife? I mean, they're all in, and I mean this in a complimentary way, they all lack self-awareness. And that's why I think they work as housewives, because I am incredibly self-aware. I'm overly self-aware. I would be a terrible reality star. You would throw a glass of wine in my face and I would apologize to you. I would right. say whatever I did, you would push my husband in the pool. I would be like, it's definitely my fault somehow. Like, you need them to have a level of, I don't even use the word delusion in a negative way, just like they've blocked it out of their mind. They go through life really just believing that they're right all the time.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. It's funny because my mom is not a Bravo viewer, but when I was home, we were binging Real Housewives of Potomac. And so it's really the first time she's really getting into housewives. And I said, you know, who's your favorite? And she was like, well, let's try, like going back and forth. She's just like, it's just that none of them are very nice. And I was like, Mom, that's not what you look for in a Real Housewife. And if you say that the nicest one is your favorite, you're probably not going to see them next season. So don't get, you know, too attached to unless, the nice one.
Unless that housewife is Heather Gay.
Right.
Right. Or Dolores Catania.
Right. Yes.
But yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, niceness is, and being self-aware is not really what I look for. And again, I know that a lot of people are angry about her. A lot of people feel like she hasn't been as honest and open towards and compassionate towards the victims. I think that we got a lot about that in this episode. So it, maybe that will satisfy them, but she's shown up to every scene. She's been at every filming. She's never missed a reunion, you know, episode. We've seen housewives run away from the cameras over a lot less. I think Kyle Cook had like 4 storm offs at the Southern Charm reunion over nothing. Like, she is sitting there. She is taking it. She definitely asked Andy, go light on me. But I think that, you know, she was prepared for him to not. And for me, call it delusion or call it balls, I think she may have them both. She's just, I think, a powerful person, and I'm proud of her.
Doesn't this in some ways make you both so excited yet terrified for what's to come on Salt Lake City?
Excited.
Think about
excited.
I mean, I don't think Jen is going to handle criticism in the same way as Erica.
No,
right.
Not at all.
Right. And I think this is really scratching the surface of what's to come on Salt Lake City. And I'm just watching this part of the reunion, I'm imagining the Salt Lake City reunion and the questions that Andy brings to Jen and what the other women are saying and what's still, you know, I just started spiraling in a sense of like, whoa, I can't even imagine how this is going to play out. The intensity of this Beverly Hills part, you know, 4-part reunion, it's going to be tenfold when we get to Salt Lake City.
Yeah, you're completely right. I think that Jen Shah has already stormed off the reunion and she's not even at the reunion. Like, can't you see
exactly.
It? I think they should just have like one of those motorized scooters for her, because she's going to be going back and forth so often.
That's so true.
Well, Dave, I do want to wrap up with a question or two, just because, you know, who knows when the next time we'll talk is. Who is your favorite Bravo Leb to interview?
Oh my goodness. So I've spoken to so many of them, and it's so funny. Everybody wonders, are they, you know, really like that on TV? They are like that all the time.
Yeah.
Like, don't you think?
Oh my God. Yes.
they're just 150% completely themselves. So Captain Lee, for example, every time I've interviewed him, like, he's a tough person and a tough interview. He doesn't like open up in the same sort of way. And, you know, Kate Chastain is, you know, a hilarious interview, thinking just beyond the housewives themselves. But I think that my favorite interviews are always with Andy. I mean, Andy is somebody who we're always wondering what he's thinking, and to get him to actually open up and actually say his feelings on things always feels so much more definitive in a way. I look forward to every time I have the honor of speaking to him.
Oh, that's so good. I love that. You also mentioned on Watch What Happens Live that talking to producers was a highlight for you when putting this book together. So what's one thing a producer revealed that really shocked you?
Oh my gosh. I mean, there were so many things. The amazing thing about this book is that we had access to the producers and the executives. I am so excited for Housewives fans to be able to say names like Carlos King, Doug Ross, Alex Baskin, you know, Lucilla, Lisa Shannon, like all these sorts of names, with the same sort of reverence and identity that they give to the housewives, because this book really lets them mention it all in a cool way. The most interesting, I don't know, there's so many off the top of my head. Carlos King had such great insight into that first season of The Real Housewives of New Jersey. And he tells a story about being at the infamous, you know, table flip dinner and talking to Danielle Staub beforehand, and her saying to him, you know, I'm going to bring the book out, and giving it to him. And he actually says that he crawled under the table and handed it to her when it was time for her, when she was comfortable about bringing it up. That was like a wild thing, because I went back and watched the episode. Like, we're like, where are you? But yeah, he apparently is the one, you know, she wanted to do it. She asked him to give it to her when she was ready. And that's what he did. And then he tells the story about how after that table flip, of course, the episode ends. We all think that they all go home in anger, but apparently they all went to the bar together and, like, you know, cheersed and talked. Danielle even just kind of hanging out with all of them. So that is like such a, when you think about that context, it just, I think, frames the scene in such a different way.
Oh my God, I have to go back and rewatch it. And also, thank you, Carlos. Thank you for that.
Carlos King. I mean, his last name is King for a reason. He is the king of reality TV. Is incredible. So I bow down to him and all the incredible moments that he gave us both in Jersey and Atlanta.
Thank you so much, Dave. This was great.
Oh my goodness. I had the best time. You know, Megan, when this podcast first started, I'm sure you'll remember, I reached out to you, like, I think, you know, when it was first announced, just telling you how thrilled I was for you. It's been such a joy to see it grow. And Eric, I've loved getting to know you over the years. I think the most of the both of you, and I'm so honored to be a guest. It's weird to be on this side of it, because I listen to you all the time. So I won't listen to this episode, but, but I'm really happy to be here. Thank you for having me. I'm truly honored.
Of course. Thank you, Dave. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 9.
And remember, watching Bravo isn't a guilty pleasure.
It's self-care.
Guys, let's keep the conversation going. We want to talk to you all week long. You can find us on Instagram at Bravo Daily Dish.
And on Twitter at Bravo TV. Just don't forget to use the hashtag Bravo Daily Dish.
Or reach out to us personally. I'm everywhere at Meg Segura.
And I'm everywhere at Eric J. Mack. That's E-R-I-K.
And if you're on Facebook, join the Daily Dish Facebook group.
You can post about what you're watching, your favorite shows, who's your favorite housewife, ask a question, start some drama. There's a lot of good stuff in there, so check it out.
You can also learn more about the podcast at bravotv.com.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Looking fine, and I got my girls with me. With the boys at the table getting tipsy, miss me, kiss.